So our work in Uganda is with Kisoro District Hospital, and it's also different from our other projects because it has a lot more resources in it, and it's a project that's in collaboration with Montefiore Medical Center and Albert Einstein College of Medicine. Again, my disclosure slide. So the area where we work is way down here. Ah, I knew it was going to do that. In the very southwestern corner of Uganda, where you can go 12 kilometers to the west and be in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and 12 kilometers to the south and be in Rwanda. And it really is geographically a long ways from Kampala, and also sort of in a very mountainous area, so it's kind of this little corner that's not very well known, except for it is a place where you can go see the mountain gorillas, which is an amazing thing. It's very mountainous. There's terraced agriculture. This is downtown Kisoro. That's what it looks like. The market, another view, farming in the crater of a volcano. And this is just to show that this is a place where there's very little vehicular traffic. Everybody walks. The women walk for hours and hours with all this stuff on their head to come to market, and whatever they don't sell, they carry home walking with the load on their head. This is what the entrance to Kisoro District Hospital looks like. It's a beautiful countryside. There are three volcanoes in the background. It's sort of a traditional African public hospital. There's no food served. There's no real nursing care except handing out medications. These are surgical scrubs lying on the ground to dry after they've been washed. So it's a hospital that has very little in the way of services. It's very, very resource poor. These are family members of patients sitting out on the lawn because there's kind of no place for them to sit inside most of the time. And they're the ones also who do the cooking for their family member and bathe them and take them out to walk and whatever needs to be done that's nursing care in places with more resources. So just to tell you a little bit about Montefiore and Albert Einstein College of Medicine and what we do, there's a relatively new global health fellowship at Montefiore that is two residents. It's our own internal medicine graduates every year. And there's two new ones that just started now. We also take residents from our medicine program and Einstein students to volunteer and study the students in the hospital. And what we do is essentially cover the adult inpatient service, which is about 70 beds. This is actually not a situation where, because I would feel bad if I thought I were taking a job away from a Ugandan doctor, but it's a public hospital. It pays so little and it's so isolated, no one will come there. And so there was really just nobody taking care of this population of patients, many of whom are really sick, other than nurses and occasionally clinical officers. So that's kind of what we do now. And we have most of the year staffed with senior medicine residents, and usually one of the global health fellows or a faculty person, and in some months, Einstein students taking care of the adult inpatient service. This is what it looks like. This is one of our residents and a patient who was happy she was better. On the other hand, it's very crowded, and when there get to be too many patients for the beds, patients bring mattresses and lie down on the floor. So here we are examining somebody on the floor. The other thing that we've done is start a chronic care clinic because there's really been, like everywhere else in the world, an extreme epidemic of diabetes and hypertension and heart disease, and so we've created a way to follow up those patients. That also depends on us, but we now have, again, most months out of the year, residents and faculty that take care of patients in the chronic care clinic. The other piece of the work is community health. And so the answer to the first part is, I mean, here we have a lot of people who, and the same is true in Chiapas, a lot of our volunteers are doctors who say, I can get off for 1 month, And the only way you can really plug somebody like that in, and even then it's difficult, is to say go work in the hospital for a month, and that's certainly what we do in Kisoro. But a lot of the financial resources, and to a certain extent medical students as volunteers, are in the community health project. There's a 2 or 3 year-long medical student volunteers that sort of administratively help organize all this, because we work in 36 plus 17 villages times 1 to 2 village health workers per village, and so the training programs involve a lot of administration and teaching and stuff like that. And then there's additional projects where, which I'll come to, the chronic disease project, women's health, nutrition, adult literacy. And so there's a lot of resources that go into that. So this is one of the village health worker supervisors. This is the first graduating class, and actually the first graduating class ended up spending 5 years in their training to become village health workers, because it was kind of being invented as we went along. And after the experience with what it took to learn each piece of the curriculum, it's been now made into a curriculum that can be done in a year, with like 2 days a month for the whole year being their training time, and that they learn the same kind of basic curriculum about vaccinations and preventive things and latrines and stoves, and in addition, treatment of simple illnesses. This is sort of what a typical house in the community looks like. This is one of the village health workers, and a member of her community who she helped build that latrine in the background. More pictures of village health workers and supervisors, a medical student with a women's group. So a crucial piece of this project, which is very different from all of our other projects, is that the Albert Einstein College of Medicine has supported the student work by giving a portion of the students' tuition for the month they'll be away from their medical school to DGH, which then puts it into this project in the hospital, which mostly goes to training the village health workers. And some students go for 2 months, and that rotation can include community work. Others work only in the hospital. And then I already mentioned the long-term volunteers that spend 9 months a year there, and they're really important to sort of administratively running the program, although little by little we're handing that over to the Ugandans, because now there's a whole cadre of village health worker supervisors and other people that can do a lot of this work. One of the things that I think is really interesting, and I've heard people here talk a little bit about this, how we're going to train village health workers to do chronic care, and we have what mostly seems to work. I've wanted to ask people how they deal with getting medication, because the supply of medication is irregular, and you're always having to change somebody's antihypertensives, because this month we don't have hydrochlorothiazide, but we do have amlodipine or something else. And so, but what we're trying to do is train the village health workers to take blood pressures, check finger stick glucoses, and with supervision, renew patients' medication so that the patient does it, because it's a big deal, as I just said, about how difficult transport is and how expensive it is to ride in cars and stuff, so that the patients can be able to get their treatment in the community and not have to be going back to the hospital every month or two. So this is sort of a chronic disease in the community day, where all the patients come and sit in a line and get their blood pressure taken and decide whether they stay on the same dose of medication or not. And then just a couple other things, the nutrition project, which is basically weighing kids and giving them Plumpy Nut. And this is the mothers waiting for their babies to be weighed and get their nutritional supplement. And that's one who's eating his Plumpy Nut. And so, I mean, it's a combination of, what?
What is that?
Oh, I'm sorry, it's a peanut-based substitute. So it's essentially ground up peanuts with even more oil and fat in them, and it comes in these little packages, and they just squirt it into the baby's mouth, and Most of them like it. I was kind of surprised that not very many of them spit it back out. And it's a fairly standard treatment for acute malnutrition. And so this is really different from, in terms of the way the village health workers are educated and stuff, it's a totally different experience from Chiapas and the Zapatistas. This is a much more like standardized, go to school curriculum, learn this, we give you your doctor bag and you get to decide how, treat malaria and pneumonia and things like that in the community, and does the patient need to go to the hospital or not, and a lot of supervision. So it's a very different model of training village health workers. So that's it. Questions for either of us? No, that's really hard, because that's a super marginalized people. That it's they're what used to be called pygmies, right? And so they're totally isolated and live in very rural places and small communities. And every once in a while, you see one walking kind of on the outskirts, but they still don't come to the hospital at all. And I honestly don't know because our project is working with like this very discrete number of communities, and it just expanded from the first set of communities and started training village health workers for the second set. But that's only a tiny part of the district that Kisora District Hospital is responsible for. And so that's an important question, an important set of people that I think are still kind of totally left out, because they just never appear in the hospital. Yes? How many members do we have?
So we have about 6,000 people that interact with us, supporters. Many of them send very modest donations. A lot of them are quite, don't have a lot of them, give a huge percentage of what their earnings are. And that's who interacts with us. We have a few hundred people who are voting members, and then because to be a voting member, we actually ask that you be a member for a year. So any of y'all can be a member. All you have to do is say, I agree with the principles of action of Doctors for Global Health. I like the mission statement. Boom. You can sign up. You can do it online. You can be a member. We're very welcoming. So of that, we've got many. I don't know, more than 1,000 people, but for people to actually be a voting member, to have a chance to change the bylaws, that group we ask to be a member for a year, contribute somehow to Doctors for Global Health-like activities, not necessarily the group itself, but doing something in your own community that's compatible with our principles, and then we welcome you to be a voting member. And to be on the board, you have to be a voting member, and you have to have been to at least one of the General Assemblies, because we want you to have some sense of who we are. It actually, it takes a few years to kind of get a sense of how we are. You know, we work a lot by consensus. Certainly we'll have votes if we need to, but our aim is to be, you know, respectful and inclusive of everything except disrespect and people who are fascists, basically. We prefer no fascists. You know, I mean, we actually don't allow people to proselytize religiously within the group. We have people who are Hindu and Muslim and Buddhist and various kinds of Christian, and people that don't think there's any higher power. You know, everybody's welcome in that. And we all get our energy from someplace, right? But we don't want anybody to actually take your beliefs and try to foist them on anyone. Certainly not in the communities where we work. That's extremely important, but even within the group. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yes. How much commitment do you ask from physicians, medical workers?
So it's very clear. It's not just physicians, right? Although there are some things that only physicians could do that, you know, in the hospital, but there are other things that only nurses can do or only public health, you know, epidemiologists can do.
I guess I'm asking for me.
Right. So that depends on your experience and your ability to work with. And so we have many places for someone who's an attending physician, I don't know what you're
practicing for 8 years.
Yeah, we'll guess. But anyway, for someone who's an attending physician, you know, that you are probably able to come in and work for months somewhere if you can do that, right?
Yeah.
Once you've been going someplace, Chiapas or some other place, for a while, you know, people actually tend to want to come for longer, but sometimes they can only come for shorter, but they already know the place so well, people know them, and so, right? So certainly for the first time, a month is...
And, I mean,
and
the
for students, we ask 4 months, right? So that's another thing.
Right, and the difficulty with students sometimes is they have to have supervision, and even though in Chiapas, for example, they're working with other doctors. Like, all the doctors in the outpatient clinic are social service year docs, which means they're just, you know, one step out of medical school, and so they're not really the best in terms of supervising medical students. So that's one of the difficulties. And the other thing to remember is, like, I mean, to go to Chiapas, you have to speak Spanish pretty well.
Because you're interacting with a lot of people who don't even speak Spanish.
Right.
So you got to at least be able to really speak Spanish. Uganda?
English.
Speak English.
Yeah. Although the patients in Uganda
don't speak English.
So you still have to deal with the patients with an interpreter by your side every minute because they speak Rufumbira.
You certainly sound like someone we'd love to have volunteers.
Yes. Go to our website. You can.
Any other questions or concerns or suggestions? You know, I hope so many, if you didn't get a chance to sign up here, be great if you did, because that gives us a chance to keep interacting. And if you're from Seattle or interested in kind of being part of us coming to the same place, it's a lot of fun. We have a scholarship for people who are students or were not making a lot of money. It's called the Sandy Kemp Scholarship. It can't pay for people's transportation, but it can pay for, you know, we find local solidarity housing. You don't have to pay the conference fee, and we just ask that you help volunteer in making the assembly happen. A lot of people came into the group via the Sandy Kemp Scholarships and are now on the board. Any other questions or thoughts?
Do you guys ever attend other conferences, like social work conferences or national conferences, to exhibit?
So we're not really tempted to say an exhibitionist, but we're not really an exhibit kind of group usually. I mean, we might, but we like to go and present what we're doing. So we certainly, within our own, like the Society of Teachers of Family Medicine, a group of folks went and gave a presentation on liberation medicine. My understanding, it was like the buzz for the whole conference last year, the STFM, and then for internal medicine, many of us have presented one way or another at the Society of General Internal Medicine and some other groups. Some people have presented it in emergency medicine and others. There's a group called the Association of Clinicians for the Underserved, ACU, that I like because it's got people from all sorts of health professionals. I don't like where they get their money, but that's another matter. And we've presented there. You know, doing it at a social work conference would be great. In fact, completely compatible with who we are. I've taught in physician's assistant and social work university situations, taught about liberation medicine, given groups. If any of you know anyone who would like for somebody to come and give a presentation about Doctors for Global Health or about liberation medicine in your university or in your community. I remember one time I went and gave back-to-back presentations of three Kiwanis clubs in Minnesota because they were supporting iodine deficiency disorders. And in El Salvador, there was a huge problem with a bocio endemic or endemic order. Thank you. That's a, I think it's an idea as well as a question. Thank you.
All right. Well, we've come to the end of our time, I think, so happy to have a not huge but enthusiastic audience, and thank you for staying until the end.